You're listening to SBS Radio broadcasting around Australia with Nitza Lowenstein. And welcome to our Facebook listeners and viewers. You are listening and you are viewing us straight from the studios, SBS Studios in Altamont. And next to me is Professor Stephen Towers. Professor Towers is a world expert on eating disorders, on anorexia, bulimia. And I put a post on Facebook. They got hundreds of people, hundreds, actually reached that post. And I asked you, are you fat? Are you really fat? Do you think you are fat? We are going to find out what does it mean to think that you are fat, and if you're really fat, what to do about it, and what's anorexia and bulimia. I think that it doesn't matter how old you are, what gender, culture, we all worried about our body image, how we look and how we function, about our health. So it's also looks and health together. And we're very fortunate to have in our studio Professor Stephen Towers. And if you are not on Facebook, you can go now to see us broadcasting on Facebook. Go to SBS Hebrew Shalom Australia, and you'll be able to see us live on Facebook. I just want to caution you that when you're on Facebook, when you see us on Facebook, when we play a song or a jingle, our marketing, it will be silent. You won't hear it. You'll only see us mimicking in the studio. You can only see or hear us talking. But the moment we are going to play song, if you want to hear the song, you will have to go back to the radio, to SBS Radio, to listen to us, or on the digital television on SBS One. So thank you for being us. And if you joined us now, welcome. Shalom, Bruchim Abaim. And as you hear, we are talking in English, and we'll be on air with Facebook till midday. And at 11:30, at 12:30, we'll come back to you with Professor Stephen Towers for our Shalom Australia listeners as well that may miss this segment today. Professor Stephen Towers, shalom, welcome to SBS, and thank you for coming here today.
Shalom, and happy to be here, delightful to be here.
Professor Towers, you've got over 35 years of experience in treating people with severe anorexia and other eating disorders. Can you please introduce yourself to our listeners? Tell us, who is Professor Stephen Towers?
Oh, that's a nice, interesting way to start things. I became very interested in anorexia nervosa in particular many, many years ago when I was in Cape Town, South Africa. My interests at that time were in sleep. I was fascinated by sleep, why we sleep, why we dream. And I'd set up a sleep laboratory in Cape Town, and I was investigating sleep. And a colleague of mine, a psychiatrist, a very well-known psychiatrist, and if you go to Royal Prince Alfred Hospital today, there's a Peter Beaumont Centre for Eating Disorders named after him, came across to me and said, please help us out. I know your area of expertise is sleep, but we have a 16-year-old girl. She's from a very wealthy family. She's beautiful. She's top of her class at school, and she's dying from this illness, anorexia nervosa. We're struggling to keep her alive. Do you think you can help? And I guess I'd come from a sleep background. I hadn't seen someone with anorexia nervosa before. And I must say, when I walked in, I agreed to do that. I thought I'd help them out, and I thought it wouldn't be too difficult. Here's a girl with a whole life ahead of her, 16, a good family background, top of the class at school. She could be a lawyer, a doctor. And so I went to see her. And I think the first thing that struck me was how thin she actually was. And I think froze when I walked into the room. I hadn't seen someone as thin as that in real life in all my life. And so began a challenge, because I spoke to her and then realized I was struggling just as much as my colleague was struggling. And so came to me as a challenge. And so the rest of my life, the challenge has continued, how to help people not only with anorexia nervosa, but with other eating disorders as well.
Do you still get a fright when you see your patients so skinny, or you got used to it?
I think, like most things, I mean, I see people, unfortunately, the thinnest person ever was 24 kilograms, but an adult. And I guess over the years, I've seen thousands of these patients over the years, that, you know, the thinness is something that I almost expect when I see someone. But when you see someone that thin and still see them alive and the challenges that lie ahead to keep that person alive, becomes quite a formidable challenge.
Talking about anorexia, can you tell us what's the origin of the word anorexia?
Yes, that's an interesting point. The word anorexia means loss of appetite, and it's probably the wrong name. It is the wrong name for this illness. William Gull, who's a very famous British physician, in 1874 saw a number of young women, particularly, I think there was a male there as well, but mainly women, who'd lost large amounts of weight, and they couldn't find anything medically wrong with them. They looked for things that were medically wrong, and they just couldn't find them. And in the end, he decided this wasn't a medical illness. It was a psychiatric illness. And he decided the reason that patients weren't eating is because they had no appetite. And nervosa means nervous. So if you translate anorexia nervosa, it means a nervous loss of appetite. But in fact, patients with anorexia nervosa, for most of the early part of their illness, don't actually lose their appetite. They are hungry. And sitting at a table with a family who are eating their meals and you not eating, it's not because you're not hungry. You are very hungry, but you are forcefully stopping yourself from actually eating the food that you desperately want.
So it actually was discovered in 1874.
Yes.
So it's not a modern disease. It's not a modern illness.
I think that's another important point. The media often get lost with anorexia nervosa. They make it in terms of a fashionable disease. It's a result of the catwalks that we have and models walking, very skinny models walking down. But I think the important point there, Nitsa, and that's a very, very important point, anorexia nervosa was first described in the medical literature when it was fashionable to be fat, not thin. So this tying up the cultural thinness as the cause of anorexia nervosa can't be right, because anorexia nervosa in its first 60 years of its existence as a medical psychiatric illness occurred at a time when it wasn't fashionable to be thin. This thinness culture that we're now in isn't helping, because dieting is a risk factor in developing anorexia nervosa, obviously, and so it's not helpful. But to attribute fashion to the cause of anorexia nervosa is wrong, because it was around long before it was fashionable to be thin.
You're listening to SBS Radio, broadcasting around Australia with Nitsa Lowenstein, and our guest today is Professor Stephen Towers, a world expert about when it comes to eating disorders, anorexia, bulimia. So what are the causes of anorexia? Do we know what prompt young girls, especially, I know there are boys also that anorexic, to stop eating?
Yeah, I think a couple of points there. I think we mustn't forget that boys develop and men develop eating disorders as well. And I think it's very underrepresented in males, because males don't, especially men, don't often go to their doctors. And boys often see this as a girl's illness and therefore will be reluctant to admit that this is a problem that they may have. But I think if you look at the statistics, probably about 20% of all patients with anorexia nervosa are male. If you look at the literature, it says about 10, but I think that's because it's unrepresented. Why do people develop anorexia nervosa? I think my understanding is that it's a genetic illness. It's an epigenetic illness. That means that you carry the genes for the disorder, but you need some trigger to actually cause the illness to develop. So you can go through your whole life with genes for anorexia nervosa and never develop the disorder. But if you end up with a severe stress, and that stress results in you dieting, which makes you feel better, makes you feel good, and you have that genetic predisposition, something happens in the brain and food eventually becomes terrifying to eat. Not all foods. Patients with anorexia nervosa eat, but they eat foods that are low in calories. They prefer vegetables and salads and avoid hot chips and chocolates. So it's not an illness where people don't eat. It's an illness where people are quite specific about what they eat.
Well, I think it's quite healthy not to eat chocolates and chips. And if I could only survive on vegetables,
yes, I think
I would love it.
I'd argue with you. Chips and cake and biscuits and wedding cake and stuff, that's good stuff from time to time. I think all of us want a balanced meal. In anorexia nervosa, it becomes extreme. And remember, it has major social consequences. If you cannot eat out with your friends, you cannot take an adolescent who's got friends, you eat at other parents' homes, you eat out at takeaway places. If you can't eat out socially because you cannot eat the food that other people eat, it severely restricts your socialization, and anorexia nervosa becomes a very isolating illness.
So, well, they feel that they have control. They feel that they control the situation by deciding what to eat and what not to eat. How do you convince them that they actually cause damage to themselves?
It's very difficult. Control is very much part of this illness. Control makes you feel good. We all like to, when we feel in control of our lives, we feel very good. When in control of our financial affairs, in control of our relationship, you know, feel good in our relationships, work, we all feel good. It's a very powerful control. And persuasion and just convincing someone doesn't work in this illness. That's the problem. If you could logically say to this person, look at what you're doing with your life at the moment. You are stuck at home. You cannot go to school. You're not seeing your friends. All the things that you wanted to achieve in life, you're not achieving. So let's just change things and do it. Unfortunately, persuasion doesn't work, and we do not have a drug, a specific drug to treat anorexia nervosa. So there's no medication that we can give that treats anorexia nervosa. There are medications that treat anxiety. There are medications that treat depression, although the depression medications don't work well in anorexia nervosa patients. So really, persuasion doesn't work. So what's needed here is to refeed a brain that's been malnourished. And when the brain is malnourished, it doesn't function very well. And on neuropsychological testing, we can clearly see the brain, when it's undernourished, does not perform at the level it should. And then you need sophisticated, highly specialized psychological help over time to try and change these attitudes now that are pretty well ingrained.
And we are talking to Professor Stephen Towers, and you're listening to SBS Radio, broadcasting around Australia with Nitza Lowenstein. Our studio guest is Professor Stephen Towers, and we are talking about anorexia nervosa. We're talking about this condition, medical condition, that Professor Towers is known around the world. He's the authority for anorexia. Professor Towers, how do we identify anorexia? Because I know lots of young girls that, most young girls like to look good. They want to be slim. They do exercise. Is it excessive exercise? Is it sudden loss of weight? Is it viril, being compulsive about and controlling what they eat? How do you identify the symptoms of anorexia?
I think it's a very important point, because what we now know about anorexia nervosa is the earlier you detect this illness and treat it, the more likely to have a successful outcome, that the person has no anorexia nervosa and gets over it absolutely completely. I've no doubt people make an absolute recovery in about 50%. The recovery is good and the person gets over it completely. The question you raise is, lots of young women, people exercise, they watch their diet and look after their figure. When is this becoming, because early detection here is vital. And I think the word that I often like to use is when it becomes incredibly rigid, when the person becomes inflexible. For example, it's your birthday and you ask, you say to the whole family, we're going out to celebrate mum's birthday or dad's birthday. And the person getting the anorexia nervosa says, where are we going? And the mother said, oh, we're going to your favorite restaurant. And they said, do we have to go to a restaurant? I don't want to go and eat. Can't we go to a movie instead? It's when the person's behavior starts to change. They still eat at mealtimes, but start becoming very specific about what they will eat. They often become increasingly distressed or withdrawn, not wanting to see friends. So if you see behavior that doesn't seem to be able to respond to reason, and it's to do with overexercise, what are the symptoms of anorexia nervosa? I think we just cover those briefly. It's severe dieting, and it's dieting that's kind of specific. They will eat as much vegetables as you put on their plate, but put a small piece of meat that has fat on it, and all hell will break loose, saying, I'm not eating that piece of meat. It's too fatty. Often meat is something that they start to avoid quite early on, and because of the fat content. So there's dieting. In some cases, there's vomiting. They make themselves deliberately ill after eating, and that's done in secret, so that's much harder to detect. they start to abuse laxatives, start taking large numbers of laxatives, which vomiting and laxatives are extremely dangerous if it's done repeatedly because it changes the salts in the body, such as potassium, and then you can run into cardiac problems and there's a risk of death. So vomiting and laxatives, extremely dangerous behavior. And then there's compulsive exercise, even if it's raining. We've had a lot of rain in Sydney over the last few days, and despite the fact it's raining buckets outside, the person will say, "Mum, I have to go and exercise." And mum will say, "That's ridiculous. No exercise today." But when the mum looks around to find their daughter, she's gone exercising because it's become almost uncontrollable for that individual. They simply have to do these behaviours. And then some of them start to binge, to overeat, which is then followed by vomiting and taking laxatives or exercise.
Is that what you call bulimia?
Bulimia is a term that's not very well understood. Bulimia comes from the Greek, and bulimia means eating like an ox. A bulus is an ox, and it's like eating like an ox. It's got nothing really to do with vomiting, but in our society now, people refer to bulimia as vomiting, and it's wrong. Bulimia actually is overeating. It's eating like an ox. And because these people, when they overeat, feel so guilty, they look for ways to get rid of the food they've eaten, and then they vomit. So bulimia just simply means overeating or eating like an ox. It's eating vast amounts of food, usually very high energy foods, chips, cakes, biscuits, etc., in a reasonably short period of time.
That's very interesting. And you're listening to Professor Stephen Towers, and we're talking about eating disorders. We started with anorexia, and I didn't realize one sign of anorexia is bulimia, which is we use it for vomiting and taking laxative, overeating, binge eating. But, you know, some eating that overeating are become obese.
Yes.
But I don't want to go to obese before we finish with anorexia, because what can parents do for the children if they detect that they have some symptoms of developing anorexia? What is the treatment? What should they do? Should they rush to a doctor? How can they seek help?
Yeah, look, I think the hardest problem here is that the person who is developing the illness is fearful of what treatment's actually going to be, because treatment's going to be to stop the dieting, to put on weight. And if you feel fat at the weight that you already are, then we can imagine the prospect of putting on more weight when you already feel so grotesque about your body means that you do anything in your power, usually, to avoid going to see a doctor, because then you have to confront the very issues. And the other thing that happens is, as your weight goes down often, your feelings of fatness increase, don't increase. So the thinner that you get, the more fat you feel. So, and we remember, fat's not an emotion. So we get caught up in patients saying they feel fat. You can feel happy, you can feel sad. But if I ask all of you, can you actually feel fat? If I touch my leg, I can feel fat. But it's a sense of, I'm not happy with my body. My body's bad, and therefore I make it bad by saying it's fat. So the question that Nitsa asked was, what should you do if you're a concerned parent? And there's an easy answer to that one, less easy when it comes to treatment. But since this illness is best treated early on, the soonest you can get your child into treatment, the better the long-term outcome is. So if you're a mother who's concerned, I suspect talk to your daughter or your son first, see if you can get through to them, see if you can sort of understand the kind of difficulties they're going through, and then get them into treatment as fast as you can. And the best port of call would be your family doctor, because anorexia nervosa has medical consequences. It drops your blood pressure, it drops your pulse. If you're vomiting and taking laxatives, it affects the rhythm of your heart, and it affects your bones. I have 18-year-old patients with osteopenia, which is the first stage of osteoporosis, and some with frank osteoporosis at the age of 19. This is an illness you need to get your child to a doctor, let the doctor do a full medical assessment, and then refer you to the appropriate psychiatrist or psychologist to commence treatment. And the earlier you start, the better.
And how successful is the treatment? Do you get positive results?
Yeah, look, again, I see, unfortunately, as you mentioned in your introduction, I'm a professor at Sydney University. I do a lot of research on anorexia nervosa. When I see patients who've been sick for 10, 20, 30, 40 years, the chances of getting better are still there, but they're very, very slight. The longer it goes on, the less chance you've got getting better. So the earlier you get in, so the psychological treatments we have for young people with family-based treatment, we get the whole family involved, that's brothers, sisters, parents. We assess the medical issues to make sure we're not missing anything there. And if we get in early, we have a success rate long-term of about 50%, which again, if you have a family member, then you'd say that's not good enough, and probably it's not. And with time, we need to get that figure up. But 50% get better. They go on to normal lives. I get pictures or photographs years later from patients of mine saying, you probably don't remember me. You treated me 15 years ago, but here's a picture of me holding my baby. People do get better, and they go on. And just to go back, something I should have said early on when you asked about symptoms, one of the symptoms of anorexia nervosa too in females is your period stop. And so loss of periods is usually a very, it needs to be investigated by a doctor, but it's one of the symptoms of anorexia nervosa as well. It's something that is no longer in the diagnostic criteria, but it's an important marker that there's something going wrong hormonally within that individual.